Welcome to another episode of the Science of Sports Recovery. As always, I'm your host, Jace Kraft. And in this episode, we are going to discuss the difference between men and women. And contrary to popular belief, women are not men. Their bodies are different, but the research world, the athletic world, we don't treat them as such. So today I'm here with Aline Guillaume, the CEO of Wild.ai, a company that is looking to solve the issue that the medical world has widely considered women as another version of men. And fun fact for you, 80% of research is actually done on male mice, whereas women mice are also different than male mice. So now before we get into the content, you must forgive me, although I think this topic is very important to discover and talk about. I'm very naive when it comes to the women's natural menstrual cycle and hormones, but as most coaches are male, and in fact, 97% of male sports are coached by male, and 60% of male athletic are coached by male coaches, then I think it's important to have this discussion from my perspective as well. So with that, Helen is going to break down the key differences between men and women in athletics and what that means for a coach or an athlete. So no further ado, let's get into it.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery podcast.
Ellen, welcome to the show. And before we get, deep dive into the content, I want just to provide some context on your background as an athlete and a businesswoman. But we'll start with an athlete. I know you have a background in triathlon. How did you get there? What was the lead into that sport for you?
Yeah, thanks, Jace. Very excited to be here. So I always done sports as a child growing up. I was training for swimming, but then I was also doing sports, that kids would do a lot of skiing, horse riding, and loved outdoors in general. And then as a late teenager, I got into rugby. So I was playing competitively rugby. And then at university, I met just my group of friends, and we got really into the triathlon sports, so running, and I actually started doing ultra marathons.
Okay.
So I was living with my best friend in Hong Kong, and we got into 100K ultra marathons running. Wow. And from there I had swimming and running, and just liked the cycling and got that into that, and then got into triathlon. So it was kind of a natural trajectory getting into triathlon.
Out of the three sports of a triathlon, what's your favorite and what are you best at?
Favorite and best, it's a good question. Favorite is, I guess, it kind of changes. I'm probably best at swimming comparatively. Mm-hmm. And annoyingly is the one that makes the least difference. and then my love for cycling and running change. Sometimes I'm really, really into cycling, and sometimes I just want to run every day and go in the mountains and run. So changes a lot.
Yeah. What about the ultra endurance sports attracts you to them? Because they can be grueling. I mean, they're no fun.
Well, actually, I think I'm quite a slow athlete, so I think endurance is pretty good for me. And it's very disappointing when people go running with me because they think I'm really good because I have a company in sports. The reality is that I'm actually quite slow. I just love sports and endurance. So I think that's why ultras are pretty good for me.
Yeah. Cool. So your LinkedIn profile also mentions that you're an ice swimmer, which caught my eye, and I had to ask you about it. Well, first of all, what is that? how do you be classified as an ice swimmer?
Yeah, I think there's 1,500 people in the world who are. So basically, it's a weird weird little sport where we basically it's basically swimming below 5 degrees in water, Celsius, and I love it. I fell into it, I guess, but I love it, and I think it's like a massive kick in the body. Here, I have a pool here where I live now, which is outside is actually quite warm, but the pool is really cold. And in the morning, I'm swimming. It's cold swimming, and it's not ice. But I'm training, and hopefully one day I might do like championships. So. Slowly but surely, I'm getting to that.
So
I'm doing more. Yeah.
There's like a world or national champion of ice swimming.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's a growing community.
That's crazy. How do you train for that? I imagine that you have to get used to the cold. Is there anything extra like that you?
Yeah, it's super
have to
weird.
Do?
It's like it's not really muscles. It's more like resilience and your body and the. And it's physiological, so you have to train the brain, but also like the body, because if you're not trained, you can die after like 3 minutes in the water. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's very interesting kind of sport. It links like breathing and meditative state and training, like exposure to cold, basically.
Interesting. Can anybody do it, or do you have to have like? Warm blood or like a natural gift for it, or can anybody train to be it?
I'm not a doctor, but I've taken a lot of people with me, and so far no one died with
okay
me. So I think it's okay, but I would not recommend to anyone because I'm absolutely not a doctor.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Okay, so obviously you have background in athletics, and what led you kind of to this discovery of, hey, you know, women are getting the short end of the stick here when it comes to research, when it comes to training, you know, philosophies and just programming and that kind of stuff. Like, when did that become a realization for you?
Yeah, so I was like doing all the sports, and in parallel of that, I studied mathematics and financial risk, and I was a quant in a hedge fund. So I was using a large amount of data sets in finance to take smart investment decisions. Mm-hmm. And I saw in sports, I had all this data that I was gathering for like my Garmin and race results, etc. And then as an individual as well, just going like to the doctor and having all these blood tests, smear tests, all scattered around, and realizing that we understood really little about our bodies, and even worse when it came to women. And I was like, when I was training with my friends, I would be like, I mean, the coach would tell me to do very similar trainings than men, and also like in terms of nutrition. So I was drinking like this bottle of Gatorade, and was as much as a man, whereas like obviously my body's smaller. Mm-hmm. And then like sometimes I felt incredibly well and strong, and sometimes I felt shit, and I felt like it's just normal variations of I don't know, it just happens. But actually, I feel like it's quite annoying to have this body that everyone says like it's moody and bitchy and you have like periods, etc. And I feel like, well, it is annoying, but like, so is it cooler to be a man? Is it better to be a man? So why am I a woman? It's like so annoying. And everyone seems to think it's annoying. Mm-hmm. And then I realized actually maybe it is not that annoying. Maybe it's just that we just don't understand that body. And it is quite an incredible body. Like that body is capable of doing something that the best scientists in the world are not capable, which is like producing from a drop a whole human being.
Yeah.
And seriously. While producing that, they can race and they can go to work and carry another 20K of kids. And it's quite incredible when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Like women were never fragile. We were never like these weak little beings that marketing and everyone likes to praise. So I thought, okay, how can we understand that better? And got into that and in research, and then I really got obsessed by that and realized that actually it was all a story that was told the wrong way, and we are incredible. It's just we need to understand how to fuel and recover and train it properly. So that's what we've done, and done extensive research on that with my team. It was like incredible, like Dr. Stacey Sims, who's like a legend in that sector, and bringing that knowledge now to the world.
Awesome. And a quick shout out to my wife. She is bearing our first child here due in, actually, by the time this episode comes out, I might be a new dad. But like you mentioned, just the awe of the female body being able to produce a human. Like, that is, blows my mind just thinking about it, like how little of input I had, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be a kid coming out. So that's really cool. And like you said, where, you know, we are, women are not men, but obviously when it comes to research, you mentioned that most are, you know, men dominated in the research itself when it comes to, you know, how does food affect us? How does training affect us? And that kind of stuff, which, you know, on some level, right or wrong, more men are in athletics as a percentage than women. So it kind of makes sense. But how do we, like, how do we start looking at where, like, what can we take from a research that may be male dominated and then apply that to women in a way that makes sense? Or do we need to basically start from scratch when it comes to some of these research articles and procedures that, you know, are out there?
Are there more men in athletics than women?
I think as a percentage of male, there are, just
participating
because,
or watching, yeah. Or yeah, I mean, I don't know stats, but like, for instance, like marathon is half, some sports are geared towards one or the other, like,
yeah,
I cycling mean, what, is 20-80.
When you get into the endurance sports, it's not as big of a split, but once you get into the team sports, I mean, you get, there's just yeah. like more options, I guess, for men with football and, I mean, it tends to be more of a male dominated sport. And then you have, I mean, with the NFL in the United States, I mean, that's a huge like thing. And then baseball is blown up more than softball. There's just like, it's kind of a male culture. Again, I'm not saying that's the right way. It just seems to be in the eyes of entertainment.
That's the word actually, like in the media. So yeah. Like when I talk about my company, like some people say, oh, female and sports is quite niche. I'm like, that's not true. Like,
yeah, by no means is
yeah that. And the reality is like the media have been portraying it. And so at school, like a kid who's a girl, she loves outdoors as much as a boy. Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know, some sort of, again, marketing has said that little girls like playing with Barbies, whereas little boys like being outdoors and run behind a ball, which, by the way, in the US, soccer is a female sport, whereas in Europe is a male sport. So like a lot of people say like, yeah, but I don't know, like the boy runs around the ball. I'm like, okay, but not in the US. So like your theory is entirely wrong. Mm-hmm. But so the issue is that there are a lot of like old girls like love sports. It is something that women and girls do, absolutely.
Yeah.
But they are disencouraged and they're not understood. So there would be like, so it's probably like double difficult for a woman to continue pursuing a career in sports. Mm-hmm. But they are like, it's still huge. And there are 3% of budgets going to female sports. And that absolutely does not represent the percentage of women playing sports.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's such a little budget going to female
because,
sports?
Because, yeah, I mean, that like some things I believe, but I believe that first, it's very convenient not to put money into women because it's been deemed more complicated. But today we have all the technology and the computing power able to understand what is the female body. And two is like it's a vicious loop. So you have male sports that are on TV, and so the media say, yeah, but it's not really interesting, the female sports, so we're not going to put it because we're going to lose money. And because you know, a friend of mine has a girls, he's a rugby player, and when we were he's an ex, and he was saying like when I'll have if I have girls one day, they'll play rugby. And then he had girls, and he was telling me, well, I know, I tried, I brought them to rugby match, but actually they only want ponies and pink. I'm like, you brought them to rugby match to see boys or girls playing? and said, man, and like they saw like these massive guys with big beards. What do you think that they see themselves playing rugby? Not at all. So like girls don't see like in media the sport, so they're not encouraged. I think it's not for them. And when they go, they're like, everyone, like when I was playing rugby, people were saying, oh, you play rugby, like with raising their eyebrows. And I was like, yeah, why is that weird? And people like do not encourage you to play this kind of sports as learning. So it's like it's a vicious loop. And then the media would say, yeah, but it's less interesting. And then I say, okay, but like if you look at boxing, you have lightweight and heavyweight. It's two entirely different sports. So if that's true, like why would female soccer be less interesting than male soccer? It makes no sense. It's just like basically it needs to be deconstructed and reanalyzed and put money put there. And the good thing is that it's not for charity, it's not to be nice, that there's a huge amount of money there. Like women are watching sports, women are playing sports, they're spending money on sports. So the people who are opening their eyes and like reacting well now, they're going to make millions.
Yeah. Millions. So do you find that, and this might be more down the like consumer line, which you should, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you've done a ton of consumer research as well. Do you find that women like watching women's sports better than male sports? Like, is it just the male ego that's saying, you know, we like watching men better? Or is it the females, like, is it because the media is portrayed that they like male sports as well? Or would they rather see female sports?
It's a really good question, but female sports is very interesting. So there's no reason whatsoever why men and women would not watch it. The only reason they don't watch it is because, like, I was at the airport one day, once upon a time, and I saw a female match being displayed at the airport. And I think it's the first time in my life I see a female match being displayed in public. You know, like if you enter any like pub or any place, you would never ever, like, it's super, unless it's like the female, like, World Cup, soccer World Cup, but otherwise you never see it. So women would watch it for sure, but men as well. And it's just like you need to make it interesting, you need to portray it, but like female sports is not less interesting than male sports. It's just a different type of sport, and we're not like less good, we go less fast maybe, yeah, sure, but it doesn't mean we're less good. Like we have a very different type of sport. If you look at, by the way, if you look at soccer played by men, I find it's like appalling coming from rugby. Like they jump on the floor, like half of the time they're on the floor, like crying halfway, like because they hurt their chin and they try to get extended time. Like female sports is fast, it's fun. They're playing, they're actually playing. So yeah, it is a totally different sport. And it is, I find, way more interesting.
Yeah,
The female soccer, because of all the things that the male soccer players are doing.
Mm-hmm. So it's probably, just from my understanding, is kind of like from, you know, you take kind of the early 1900s when you have all this stigma of like, no, like women don't exert yourself because you're fragile and that kind of stuff. And then, I mean, like the WNBA wasn't even a thing until the late 1990s. So, I mean, that's like, that wasn't that long ago. And to think that now, you know, we're still struggling as a culture to say, no, like women's sports should be at the same level as male sports. But then like, there's so much media around male sports, you kind of get to know the characters, right? So it's like in a show that you're watching, when you're brand new to that show, then you're like, I don't know. But then once you get to know the characters, then you're like, okay, I know who to root for and who to root against or whatever. I think just because there's not that media coverage and female athletes, it's harder to get to know some of the characters, if you will, in the sports to either root for or root against. What's your kind of take on that?
I think you're right. I think is, and that's why it's important to portray them, and that's why it's a vicious loop. Like if there are no media, no money put there, then there's no like well-known women, and because there's no well-known women, people don't want to pay them a lot, and because they're not paid a lot, it doesn't attract the right people who are really ambitious and want to make a career, etc. So I think it's like it's a vicious loop. But indeed, like if you start knowing people, I mean, like if you look at like now we're talking about like the top of the top, like like the international like games. But if you look at like local communities, like girls playing soccer after school, if they're not encouraged and they're not continuing, if they continue, then people would come because like they want to see people they know from their own community mm-hmm. and they want to encourage them, etc. Totally. And everywhere in the world, like if you think of like, I don't know, a favela in Brazil, like, and you would have like girls encouraged to play games, etc., instead of like needing to hide because they have their periods and it hurts and they don't know what to do with it, mm-hmm. you would probably see a rise of like female stars coming up. And it does happen like in a lot of sports, like runners, you have a lot of runners, female runners who are extremely good because they've been like pushed in that way. So mm-hmm. I mean, like you coming from endurance, so I think yeah, it's a vicious loop that needs to be turned around, and everyone needs to participate, like politics, and need to encourage it, need to give money to local communities, like media need to involve their money, team owners need to invest in female sports as well, and then you need to change the wording, like when we say like WNBA, then the other one needs to be called the MNBA, because otherwise the female sports is always a subset. You have like sports, female sports, health, female health, technology, female technology. But that means that when you say female technology, it means the other one is men technology. And in sports, it's the same. Like we basically, our sports are subset always, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be like that because we're not a subset. We're like basically,
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. It's kind of the way it's written or, you know, kind of portrayed. Yeah. It's like you have the sport and then you have like the offshoot or the off is portrayed. Cool. Okay. Well, really interesting conversation there, but I do want to get into kind of the nitty gritty of the menstrual cycle and how, women are, you know, in fact different. So obviously there's some obvious difference, like just different body shape and the menstrual cycle. Are there any other differences that maybe aren't as obvious as those two? Are those kind of the main ones?
Yeah. So basically women as we grew up, like if you imagine a little girl who's 14, she has her periods for the second time and she's at school and she's asked by the gym teacher to run around like the other kids, but it hurts and she bleeds. So her puberty is basically like she's hearing things that she's like should ignore these pains because they don't exist. And she's like moody and bitchy. And whereas a boy, when he has puberty, he's going like growing muscles and strength and testosterone. So we have a very different puberty. And then throughout our life, we have these massive life phases, which men again don't really have. So we have like, we take different pills, like a 14-year-old may take a pill to fight acne, but a pill has a huge hormonal impact on the body. And then abortions, try to get pregnant, miscarriages, pregnancy, post-pregnancy, 10 years of perimenopause and menopause. So we have like these big life stages, which really impact our life. And for 40 years, when we do have menstrual cycle, again, like the body changes every single day. So to give you some brief examples, when we have periods, we might need iron. When we ovulate, we need increased fats. After ovulation, we need to time our protein intake very well. We have 45 minutes window to take proteins, whereas a man has a 24 hours window. So if we don't respect these kind of things, it means that we basically have permanent instabilities, and women have a lot of different type of pains, like that are all unbundled under the word period pain, but it's like ovulation pain, endometriosis, polycystic ovary syndrome, IBS, and all these things can really be helped and solved by behavior and nutrition. So we need to basically understand the situation and then tackle it, because these are real health conditions which are ignored most of the time, or amenorrhea. So a lot of females who are active have amenorrhea, so they lose their periods, which in sports is often said like, oh, it's totally normal, like if you're a woman and you do sports, you're going to lose your periods. But it's not, because it's actually like there's a correlation between nutritional values, your periods, and your bone density. What happens when you train a lot is that, as I mentioned, you need to understand how to fuel the body correctly. And a man is protein and carb intake. For women, it changes all the time. If you're not respecting that, you go in nutritional imbalances, and that leads to losing your periods. And that is linked to your bone density going down. So you basically increase your risk of injuries. And a lot of very good female athletes miss their career because of that. So it comes from a misknowledge.
I want to stay on that for a bit, because especially I don't have as much experience in team sports, but as far as what females are doing there. But I do know when it comes to endurance, especially like top level endurance female athletes, there is a big problem with athletes losing their period, like not having a period at all, which is, you know, crazy. I mean, we just talked about how the female body is, you know, so unique and that, but then it's getting closer to, you know, kind of a machine at that point instead of a body. If you stick around and listen to enough of our episodes here on the Science of Sports Recovery podcast, you'll notice a common theme of importance of mobility in recovery and injury prevention. That's why I recommend checking out the Ready States Virtual Mobility Coach to help you improve your mobility, recoverability, and injury prevention. The Ready State is a brainchild of coach and athlete Dr. Kelly Starrett, who you can learn more about on episode 13. His Virtual Mobility Coach program helps athletes understand the importance of recovery, pain relief, and self-care. In other words, it helps fix the recovery side of training so you can keep seeing results from your workouts. His program will guide you through the same mobilizations used on athletes in the NFL, NHL, and MLB, provide custom tools for pain relief, give you customized pre and post exercise mobilizations based on your training and sports schedule, and deliver daily mobilizations to keep you on track to achieve your goals. You put your heart and soul into your workouts. Make sure you get the most of them by going to thereadystate.com/Jace. Again, that's thereadystate.com/JASE. The link will also be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. So first of all, let's talk about, like you said, nutrition was kind of, is that the main point of how a female loses their period? And I guess before we get there, just quick question, will you perform better or worse without a period? Let's just get that off the table.
That's a really good question. So yeah, a lot of coaches would say like, just take continuously your pills so you won't have your periods, etc. The interesting thing is that actually the periods is not the time where the woman might feel the worst. It's actually often it might be just before, called the premenstrual symptoms. Mm-hmm. So it is at that time possibly. But the answer to your question is that there is no proper research done on that. So that's another dramatic impact of what is happening, is that we're taking pills and hormones, etc., and actually we do not understand the female body. Mm-hmm. And some women, I don't remember the name of that athlete, but she had said in the press that because of taking the pill, actually she was performing less well. But these are more anecdotic, so we need to research that. Mm-hmm. We need to research that properly to have a proper answer, because like female are like turning to us and they were like, okay, well, there is no proper answer.
Sure. So if anybody says you'll lose your period, you'll start performing better, don't take their word for it because it hasn't been studied.
There are many reasons why you may not bleed. One of which is taking a contraceptive that cuts your period.
Okay.
And that's very different than having amenorrhea from nutritional imbalances or like training more. So those are like two different reasons.
Okay.
It also has different impacts on the body. And to your other question, why would a woman lose her periods? Mm-hmm. So if you think about like another common reason is that women who are anorexic, and what is happening when you're anorexic is that you do not eat enough. So you obviously do not have enough nutrients going in your body. But when you train a lot, you also need an increase of intake of food. And it needs also to be timed well, and we need a certain type of food at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So unlike a man who would be like quite linear in terms of like the nutritional values that he needs, for women it changes based on the menstrual cycle. So sure. When you train a lot, you actually are going into nutritional deficiencies, and that means that your body is struggling, and the answer is losing the period. The other answer is that it's actually a very external sign of an issue, and the linkage to that is that her bone density will go down. So okay. her bones break and her injury risk goes higher. So it's a real condition, but until now it's really not been treated or regarded sure. as a condition at all.
Yeah.
It was like totally normal. Don't worry. You won't have your periods for like the 10 years of your career and it's normal. And it's absolutely not.
Yeah. So, okay. So the nutritional deficiencies, if you're losing your period because of that, you're likely in losing bone density as well. Yeah. What like from a nutritional standpoint, I guess let's just go into like the different stages of the menstrual cycle and what you should be looking at from a nutritional side yeah. at those different stages.
Yeah, and another point on that, when you did on your nutrition, basically like the basis is when you have your, so we split the menstrual cycle in five phases.
Okay.
So the first one is when you have your periods and the follicular phase. So early follicular when you have your periods and follicular, then you ovulate, and then the luteal phase, and then the late luteal phase when you have premenstrual symptoms.
Okay.
So that's the five phases. In terms of nutrition.
Let's just go through, I guess, those one at a time then for nutrition.
Perfect. So in terms of nutrition, at the beginning, so when you have your periods, you should take carbohydrates and protein and fluids. And then same thing for the second one. So that's the follicular phase. And then at ovulation, so that's the middle, you should increase simple carbohydrates intake before training, and a low percentage of glucose sports drink if you're training for long durations.
Okay.
Then in the luteal phase, and also an interesting point when you are ovulating is that your defenses are going lower, because you are, when you ovulate, you're basically opening up to the possibility of receiving and like to have a baby basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so although your body is really strong, your immune system might be decreased a little bit as well.
Okay.
Then you're entering the follicular phase. So this is just before the premenstrual symptoms. So you can alleviate those symptoms. So you can increase carbohydrates as well, and then have a leucine-rich protein just after training. And then for when you are having your premenstrual symptoms, you should increase starchy carbs and protein post-training. Time your protein intake quite well as well. And if you are training at high intensity or long durations, increase the carbs intake as well.
Okay.
And then you have supplements that you can take as well, which in my ideal world, you would not need. But actually, it is like we don't have the right nutrients in the food we take naturally. So supplements are actually quite good.
Okay.
And then, so the interesting thing here is, go back to what I forgot to say. If you look at not the highest level of sports people, but maybe a bit lower, like if you see a man and a woman starting a training protocol, like mm-hmm. in the gym, you would see the man getting like leaner and fitter, and the woman, she's eating less and she's training more and she gains belly fat. And the reason behind is that when women go into in eating less, they go into starvation, and so they stock up, and so it has the total counter effect of what they expect,
mm-hmm.
and that's a real issue. So they actually should be eating more because they're training more, and they should be eating more, but at the right things at the right time. So that's
sure.
the difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to just kind of go back through those five stages the way I understood them, just to make sure that the listeners
yeah.
Catching that. So stage one, that's during the period, you want to increase carbohydrates. Like, is that the complex carbs?
Yep.
And then
proteins and fluids as well.
Okay, plus protein, and then. Okay, and then making sure you have the fluids there. And then that would, then you said that's pretty much the same for the second stage?
Yeah. And then at that first phase, you also have your periods. So you can mm-hmm. also take iron to help reduce fatigue.
Okay. And then just for the men out there, how long is that first stage typically?
It's between like 2 and 7 days.
Okay. And
the interesting thing is that, contrary to like popular belief, women at day three of the periods, they often going to feel like really strong and regenerated. The resting heart rate is like lower and have very high sex drive as well. So it's very counterintuitive, but it's
Okay.
Very easy for the woman. Yeah.
So actually during their period is when you get a lower resting heart rate
From day three.
Day three. Okay. Cool. So that's when you would want to go race then.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
From like day three up to ovulation is really good and positive. But the good thing is that when you are following, like helping your body and go with your body instead of against, overall, you're getting stronger all the time.
Yeah.
So you can race anytime as well.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. Okay. So increased carbs and proteins and fluids, and then potentially take an iron supplement or at least really explore iron-rich foods there for the first stage, which would be the period. The second stage, increasing the carbs and the proteins as well.
Yeah.
What about the iron supplement there? Is it as necessary
or not?
At that
time, you don't have your periods. Yeah, you don't have your periods anymore at that time. So, but you can take like magnesium if you have like hormonal headaches. That's phase two.
Cool. Okay. And then during ovulation, you're wanting more simple carbs mentioned as prior to training, some sort of
training. Yeah.
What about like afterwards?
And then afterwards, like you can like do like no caloric restriction because it can affect your sleep. But then what you can also do is a low percentage of glucose drinks before or like during your training as well. If you're training for long durations, that helps. And then you can take like magnesium supplements again, and zinc and glutamine to support your immune system. So as I said, like your immune system at ovulation is a bit lower, so you can help your immune system with that.
Okay. What about those like vitamin C or emergency packets that are like supposed to fight off, or boost immunity? You know anything about that?
Like, you mean generally or for women ovulating?
Generally, like
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, like, I don't think it's like vitamin C is not counterindicated, I guess, but I don't know.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. The zinc and glutamine that you recommended, been like specific studies on immunity boosting during that time, or is it just kind of a more known?
Yeah. Everything that we say is like backed. So like if you use the app, actually you have that and you have like all the sources as well. And
Cool. Yeah. And we'll get to this in a second, but quick shout out now, wild.ai. If you go to their website, you can check out their app where, most of this information, or all of it probably, is going to be laid out in a way that very understandable for you.
Yeah.
So go check that out and we'll talk about more that later. But then we're getting past stage ovulation. We're getting to the fourth stage and then into the premenstrual stage. So on the fourth stage, you mentioned something about a 45-minute window of protein after workout. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, basically, like to replenish the muscles, we have 45 minutes, especially at that time, so the fourth and fifth phase of the menstrual cycle, to replenish our muscles, so to take the protein intake. Like for a man, it actually doesn't really matter. Like you have 24 hours after, so you can take a long time. But for us, we need actually to eat the proteins straight away, basically, like leucine-rich proteins, and then rich as well in essential amino acids, vitamin D, B6, and that will help reduce the onset of PMS symptoms, so premenstrual symptoms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And for your listeners out there, I actually had talked to Jess O'Connell, who's a Canadian Olympian in the 5K last week, which her conversation will actually be released after this conversation a week afterwards. But she mentioned the importance of eating right after a workout, not waiting till you get home. And it sounds like, especially for a female athlete, so this is way important as well. Yeah. So what happens, I guess, if you don't get that in within 45 minutes? Like, what does the body start to do?
Scientifically, it would be my team to reply to that. What I do know is that it doesn't replenish correctly the muscles. So basically, your recovery would be longer. Got less efficient.
Yeah. So it's, in simple terms, it delays the recovery.
Probably.
Cool. And then in the fifth stage, then we have the premenstrual stage.
So like here in terms of nutrition, so increase protein pre-training, timed protein intake after as well, increase starchy carbs, and then increase carbohydrates, which a lot of women don't do, if you are training high intensity or long duration. And in terms of supplements, if you do have premenstrual symptoms, you can take omega-3, magnesium, zinc. If you have like symptoms like tender breasts, cramps, headaches, mood swings, muscle aches, pains, etc. So that actually really helps. And the interesting thing is that often when you see like supplements protocol, like if you are talking to a nutritionist, something like that, would tell you like, okay, take iron because you have iron deficiency, or take omega-3 or magnesium. But that's true actually, but depending on where you are in muscle cycle. Mm-hmm. And again, that's quite important, because otherwise you think supplements are actually not needed for your body at that time. And you may not take the ones you really need, like for instance, the last time, like you may take only omega-3, whereas actually you also need magnesium and zinc.
Sure.
So understanding that is like, you could.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about like protein intake, carbo intake. And then the third kind of pillar of macronutrients would be fat intake. Does that change at all through the one through
at
five stages?
At ovulation, you should really increase your fat intake around ovulation.
Okay. So third stage ovulation, increase the fat intake. Got it. Okay. So let's talk about like, trackable wearables, because, obviously if the tracker is kind of a male dominant, based on the research and even treadmills, like you get the calorie counters and, they typically steer towards like, this is what a male would burn, during this time and that kind of stuff. First of all, do we see that with fitness trackers as well, that they're trying to put a female into a male kind of data set?
Yeah, 100%. Like I'm using like an Oura Ring and a Whoop and my Garmin, and basically it reads my data sets as a man. So it would say like, oh, your resting heart rate and body temperature go up, so you're going to get sick. That's true if I was a man, but as a woman, I'm just ovulating. Mm-hmm. So here the question is like, how can all these products, services, devices basically like cater everyone, but actually doesn't cater women? So basically these technologies are should be called men technology. And what we are creating is the knowledge that serves our app. So the underlying could serve all these products, services, devices through an integration. And that's our aim. So being able to serve all women who are using these products, services, devices for technology.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying is whether you have like a Garmin or Polar or Whoop or Fitbit, your app is working in correlation with those to essentially say, okay, this is what the app is saying, but this is what the female body is supposed to be doing. And then relating the information back to you, so you have a holistic view of like, this is what the data says, this is what's supposed to happen, that kind of thing.
So that's our aim. Yeah, we have our members are asking for the integration. So that's our aim would be that these products can serve them properly with our integration. Yeah.
Okay. So what integrations do you have, if any, right now?
Right now we have the data coming to us, not the other way around.
Got it.
We take data from Garmin, Strava, Oura Ring.
Okay.
And Training Peaks as well.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked about kind of the nutritional uptake changes with the menstrual cycle as well. What about like training output from a coaching perspective? You know, males are kind of, you know, easy, as we're more linear. We can say, okay, a Tuesday, Friday workout every week, and then some weeks we do a Wednesday workout and a race on Saturday, or game on Saturday, or what have you. Does there need to be more of like working with, like, in a perfect world, you know, where you could individualize everybody's training, how would you work with the training load with the females, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on where you are in the menstrual cycle, absolutely. And you have to time it, and when you time it well, so it's like the training, the recovery, and the nutrition, when you time them correctly, you actually have the maximum output of the female body. And that's basically like what we're helping with.
Cool. Do you have somebody like on your team that does kind of more of that type of, I don't know, research is the right word, but like
the research is done, like, so Dr. Sahana Gopal is doing that in their team, and Dr. Stacey Sims, who wrote that book Roar and is like really well known in the female physiology world, they're working on that. And then we also work with a coach called Bevan McKinnon. So yeah, we have a team working on that. So, yeah.
Okay. From your perspective, I guess, do you have maybe one or two takeaways for a coach that they're working with, you know, a female athlete? And I mean, first of all, how do you facilitate the feedback there? You know, because this could be a whole nother, you know, 30-minute conversation just about the tabooness around, you know, menstrual cycles and that kind of stuff. But it, providing that there is open communication between athlete and coach, how should the coach structure their training to maximize, you know, recovery and training?
If you are training with women as a coach, now we are, because we had that question a lot, we basically created a coach interface. So now women can work with their coaches as well. And the idea is to be able to educate the coaches on that sense, like how to train them, what to train them, what to do. Basically when you are in the first phase, you should do like high intensity strength based on endurance or endurance based training with like good warm up. And then at ovulation, you can do maximal strength and power based training at the gym. There is a risk of ACL and like ligament injury because the body opens up to get pregnant every month. Later on, like the phase four, you can do like long duration aerobic endurance work, high volume and lower intensity gym training. And the last phase is a really good time to do deload work, strength or endurance training with a focus on improving like technical elements. So less high intensity basically. And so when you time that correctly, actually you have a fully blown like training plan, which encompasses all the areas that women should be working on.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Okay. So I know we're getting to our end of the time here. I do have two questions for the audience. If you're listening and you're like, how do I submit a question? You can just get on my email list. I send out who I'm talking to. And then I get some of the top questions back. And sometimes I put them into our conversation. Other times I do them here. So these are meant to be 60 seconds or less, no more for answers here. First question, what percent, in your opinion, unless if you know, what percent of women do you think are working with their menstrual cycle when it comes to nutrition, training, all that, versus like, you know, not paying attention to it at all when it comes in at a macro level?
I have no idea the number, but I would think very low, because like there was no awareness on it. So a lot of women, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, it makes total sense, but I had never thought about it. So mm-hmm. yeah, it would be really, really low. I mean, probably like less than 1%, I would say, but I don't have numbers.
So. Yeah. But the main point is there's a huge opportunity here.
Yeah.
The next one that we didn't cover yet was just, what is the future of W or Wild AI? We kind of talked about more of the integrations. Yeah. What else do you have cooking?
Yeah, so right now we serve women in the app. We also onboard coaches. So it's like a really big step for us. And the next stage is like really be able to integrate with all the like nutrition, sleep app, training app that all women already have on their mobile phones for the general masses with our integration. So now we like focusing on women who are actively doing sports, have wearables, but later on we want to serve all women of all ages, life stages, and ethnicities.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was certainly a pleasure having this conversation, Ellen. And if you're listening, you can go to wild.ai and find out more information about Ellen, her team, the app, as well as believe the app is called wild.ai on either Google Play Store or iTunes. So you can go check it out there. Anywhere else, Ellen, can people find you?
Everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube as well. But yeah, wild.ai, or my email if you want to write me directly, Ellen@wild.ai. And yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I'll have all the links and that kind of stuff in the show notes. So if you're like, I need to reach out to this lady, go there and you can find that. Again, Ellen, thanks so much for being part of the show.
Thank you, Jason. So exciting for you becoming a dad.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's @jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at jase, J-A-S-E, @scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.